Welcome to Resiliency Talks, a podcast where we celebrate the invincible human spirit and the triumph of the human will. Hosted by Essie Bagheri, a former child soldier refugee who has walked through 17 treatment centers, 29 detoxes, and experienced homelessness. Today, Essie stands as a beacon of hope and resilience, having transformed his life to become a productive member of society, a TEDx speaker, a published author, and the host of this very podcast. Essie's mission is to share his journey of overcoming addiction and trauma, and to inspire and empower others to find their own path to healing. Join us as we explore stories of courage, perseverance, and the transformative power of resilience.
Hi, welcome to Resiliency Talks. Appreciate being here. In this podcast, we talk about resiliency, addiction, trauma, overcoming challenges. And our aim with this podcast is to inform and inspire and bring people that they've been through addiction, they've been through abuse, they've been through hell, basically, and also showing other people that recovery is possible. And usually I bring guests that I know a little bit of their background, or at least I saw them through my recovery, and something about them clicks that I know that it will help other people. Today's guest is someone that I met years ago, again, in recovery, and Nanette. Welcome to the show, and please introduce yourself and say why you're here, and what's your purpose of doing this?
Hi, Essie. Thank you for having me on your show today. I do this because I have recovered, and I know what it takes, right? Like, I've been through a lot, and my passion has become, right, sharing my experience, sharing what I have learned to help people, to wake people up, to help them get well, to, you know, help them find that path of recovery and healing, which I think is so important. And, you know, I realize some people never even make it to that point. You know, I feel very blessed that I found myself in recovery and surrounded by people that really cared and really had a passion to help people heal and get well. Hence, right, the motivation to do the same going forward in my life. So I never imagined myself to be doing this. You know, years ago, like if you told me that I was going to be doing this, I'd be like, not a chance, right? Because I was very out there in the materialistic world and, you know, doing real estate and chasing the dollar. And, you know, in reality, my life was falling apart. So I had to stop, right? I had to stop everything and just question, like, where my path was leading. And it wasn't you know, went to recovery and here I am.
That's it. Thanks. You know, I really admire people. The biggest thing that I learned, Nanette, through my own journey is you just mentioned that to be vulnerable, and you know, me too. At one point, there's no way that I would dream that one day I come and share through my heart and to talk about my struggle and my challenges. But as a result of doing that and the way I feel today, so I totally understand. So for our audience to know a little bit about more about you, how long you sober? And if you tell us, like, how did you end up in recovery?
I'm almost 11 years sober. It's a funny story because, you know, I never imagined myself to go into recovery. I had a partner at the time who was going into recovery, and there I was trying to support him. So I ended up in, you know, some rooms of recovery and spending time with him there, recognizing that I too had a problem. When he went off to treatment, I thought that I can just clean up on my own and just stop. I was drinking heavily. I was smoking pot heavily actually at the time too, and I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. It was a shock to me, so I had to go put myself in a detox, right? And detox is where I learned, some of the I learned about 12-step programs. I learned about some therapy. I learned about some CBT. I was given a counselor. I was given an addiction doctor who actually saved my life. And so I was surrounded, right, in care. And I didn't realize how much care I was going to need, how many people I was going to need to surround me to get well. But I felt like I had a team, right? Like I had an addiction doctor, I had classes to go to, I had a therapist, I had, group support meetings to go to. And that's what it took for me to get well, plus a willingness to do it, right? So I had to be willing to be in those rooms and meet with those people, right? And start really healing some of the stuff that I felt I was drinking and using over.
Yes, totally. Many people, they really don't understand. There's a stigma, Nanette, as you know, about addiction, and that's not helping people like you and like myself to really get help, because there's the society, we're getting much better. So to really to be fair, it's way better than years ago, but still there's a stigma, and people really don't know. And that's why I do what I do with podcasts, with the book that we and the other things that I do through recovery, and to let the audience know, if you could take us back to your childhood before age of 10. And because I believe personally, I believe it's very crucial for people to know that we don't just, those belief system that we built, those the way that we operate when we grow up, 30, 40, whatever years that we are, and we still have that belief. So I think it is important to let people know, where we were, and so other people can relate. If you could take us from until age of 10, that would be great.
Sure. I love what Dr. Gabor Maté says about addiction. He says not what he says, ask not why the addiction, why the pain, right? Because we all have a wounded child within us, right? That needs to be tended to and loved and healed. And so as a kid, I grew up in an alcoholic home. But I also grew up around a community, like a big family community of Puerto Ricans, right? So, on the weekends, like I was surrounded by this big, huge community of aunts and uncles and cousins and grandma, and very loved and sort of raised by that, for 3 days in the week. And then the other part of the week, I was going home and, to, someplace that I didn't feel safe and I was scared. There was physical abuse, there was mental and verbal abuse, and I was in a place where, I thought, people who love me hurt me, and as a survivor of that, I found myself dissociating quite a bit. And even through some of the physical abuse, right? Like I remember, I know it happened, but I couldn't tell you about the pain. I couldn't tell you about what was going on because I would dissociate. But I lost all trust and respect for my mom. And my dad was, what you saw is what you got. So, but you never knew what was coming through the door. So a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, walking on eggshells. before the age of 10. And, we moved a lot too. So, I didn't have stability at home. I didn't have stability at community at school. I think part of the weekends, I think some of the weekends with my family, saved my life in that time. Because I felt like, I felt okay there. Like I felt safe and protected there. I felt like I was a part of something and a part of community, and I fit in at home, for whatever reason. Like I didn't feel that way. I didn't feel good about myself. I felt like I was wrong because I was always being told I'm wrong or for being a kid. The simple things, right? Like, I don't know, riding your bike in the street, or getting bruised or ripping your clothes, because you're outside playing. Like these things weren't a norm, what a normal kid would go through. Like this is being a normal kid, right? I was getting in trouble for those things, right? And criticized and blamed and shamed for those things. So, I just felt like, everything about me was wrong.
So you had that belief system that I can relate to that regarding the way that we raised up, the way that we were treated as a child, and even years of being in recovery realized, oh my God, like my I'm operating with that belief system, which wasn't serve me anymore. It didn't serve me anymore. So now, the first time that you had any kind of substance, so now you're in your teenager, teen years, and if you could take us the first time that you experienced that taking a drink or any other substance that makes you feel more alive in a way.
If my first drunk, I wasn't home. I was about 14, 15, but I was on a teen tour camp and we were in the Bahamas. And, what I remember about that first time drinking was that, it was going down smoothly. And from that very point on, like I didn't have a stop button. Like I just kept going, and I kept drinking. And I probably at some point probably liked the elusive effect. So I just kept drinking more, but I overstepped, I overhit. I went past the bar and I ended up, puking and throwing up and being very sick. And when I went back home, I was sick in bed for 2 days, but it didn't, it didn't dawn on me to like, I'm never going to drink again. It just dawned on me like, you know what? I'm never going to have those fruity drinks again, right? Drink differently next time, right? So when I went back home, I didn't have easy access to alcohol. It's interesting, right? Because my dad was an alcoholic, but there was no alcohol in the house, right? He'd do it when he was out, and his job allowed him to do that because it was very social. So he didn't do that. But when he came home, he used to smoke pot, and there was pot in his bedroom, and I knew that. And I was introduced to pot by my friends, and pot was easier to get. And I liked pot when I tried it because all of a sudden I just didn't care. I didn't care about, who was going to walk through the door, how my dad was going to walk through the door. I didn't care that I had no respect for my mom. Like I really didn't like my mom. And I felt okay, right? Like I felt at ease. It just calmed me down, calmed my nervous system down because my nervous system was always on alert, always at home, at school, because I was always the new person on the block, trying to fit in. So it calmed my nervous system. So I started smoking pot by myself, and I actually quite liked that because it gave me, I went into a different world where nothing mattered, right? Ease and comfort. But at the time it wasn't legal, right? So as I started moving forward, right, it turned into more of the alcohol because alcohol was socially acceptable, right? And not everybody would, you couldn't smoke pot on the street, you couldn't smoke pot in somebody's house. Like alcohol was more accessible, so I started just doing that. But every time like I got sick, I would just say to myself, and it happened a lot, I'm not going to drink that again. I'm going to drink, I'll drink something different. So I eliminated fruity drinks, I eliminated champagne, I eliminated beer, I eliminated coolers, and by, I'd say by 17, 18, I was like on hard liquor, right? Hard liquor. That's all I drank.
So that's many people I heard, I think once you said something like alcohol actually killed more people than opiate. And I think because our society, it's like, because there's liquor store all over the place, it's very socially acceptable, and I believe that's one of the things that that affect a lot of people, because we think because it's we can easily access the liquor, so must so it shouldn't be as dangerous as opiate or other drugs that that we use. So now. So I can relate with what you're saying totally. So when was the turning point? Because we want to dive into some of the solution, but in to just set the ball rolling for our audience, when was the turning point that you said, I can't do this anymore. I'm sick and tired of being, I don't know, at least that was my experience and many people that that I see or talk to. They said, you know what, this I can't do this anymore. What was your, and when that click that, you know what, I need to do something, and how other people, the people that are listening to us, how can we let them know these turning point? Because it is affect their decision. Because sometimes in the turning point for some people, they just ignore it. So what was your turning point?
I feel like there were a few. It wasn't just one in particular because there were a few throughout my life. Like there was probably a huge turning point at 30 for me where, like I couldn't, I was playing hard, I was working hard, I was married, right? We were in this big, huge social scene and, drugs and alcohol all the time. And I found myself just cleaning drugs up and alcohol every weekend from my home. And, I woke up and just like felt it had to be stopped. And I called my husband, I can't do this anymore. And for a year, it was okay, right? But then, carry on a year later and it just kind of starts up again. But my real one, when I was like done, the marriage was gone, it was broken up, for sure. I truly believe it was alcohol and drugs that ruined that relationship. Afterwards, in that breakup, like I had lost an entire family. I was looked at as a bad guy. I lost all my friends because, he was born and raised here. I'm from New Brooklyn, New York. And, so when I came here, I just enmeshed into his world. So that world is gone now. I have two little ones, two little girls at the point they were like 2.5 and 5. Single mom, all of a sudden, no community, no support. And I didn't know how to meet people. So I went out there to meet people, and to build community. And what I did was just build a very rocky community, fair weather friends, again, party people, the party scene. But I think, what did it for me was I just remember I was drinking by myself and I fell to my hands and knees on the floor and I was just done. Like my kids were sleeping downstairs. It was 12:30 in the middle of the, night. And I was by myself and I was drinking and I didn't feel like I could stop. And I fell to my hands and knees and prayed to, a God that I had no connection with. Like I had lost connection a long time ago, and asking for help, and 2 months later is when I met, that guy who, went into recovery. And the funny thing is about that is, I look back now, meeting him at the time, like we were both a mess, like a mess. Like we partied together. It went downhill really, really fast. But what I noticed, what I recognize about that relationship, coming into meeting him, God used another alcoholic to save my life, because I did not have the courage to walk into, a support group on my own. I had been looking for months, like, at the time there was a Yellow Pages, I think. I was looking right on the Yellow Pages. I was looking online for the support groups. I was trying to find the courage to walk into one of these meetings, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it, and when I met this person, I was able to do it. I walked in with someone, I mean, thinking that I was going to help them, but the denial runs deep. See, the denial runs deep, but I was done because, I didn't have any good, healthy relationships around me. Most of them are actually quite toxic. I could barely work anymore. Like my work was falling apart. The kids, like it was bare. I was just scraping by to take care of the kids, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And I was at that point where, like, I was just doing things that were dangerous and not in the best interest of me, or those around me, right? Like I couldn't. Everything that I thought I had built up after the marriage just fell apart. And I was like, this has to stop, because I was a mess. The kids were a mess. We had all just come out of divorce a few years ago. And that did it.
It's
And the fact that, two alcoholics trying to recover, I felt one of us was gonna die if one of us didn't get sober, clean and sober. One of us was gonna die, right? They talk about adoption rather than promotion. Like, I recognized one of us was gonna die because it was getting dangerous and really bad. And I didn't want to die. I didn't want to die.
No, that's totally. Thank you for sharing that. It is absolute crucial. Have you ever thought that, like 11 years, almost 11 years ago, that being in recovery for that long, and the peace that you have, in spite of challenges, in spite of difficulties, in spite of what life throws at us, in your case, at you, and sitting here with your having dignity and having peace of mind and having and watching personally watching you always talk about spiritual growth. So now you are almost 11 years sober. You've done. For our audience, it is crucial to know that it's not just come drinking, we put aside the drinking. Drinking, actually, I always talk about that. The drinking wasn't a problem. Actually, in my case, or many other people, I don't know if you can relate to this or agree with this, drinking and drugging was my solution for many years. So now you came to recovery. And again, I hear you talk about, discovering, and it's a process. If you tell us right now for our audience, you are not just in recovery, but your whole work. And if you tell us a little bit what you've done in last 10,
11
11
years.
years, 11 years, and now you're impacting other people. You're working with a lot of other women, men, and your job, what you're doing as a work is around that. So I remember that you went to a school, and So can you tell us a little bit what you've done as far as the educational and what you do now to help not just in a recovery rooms but outside the rooms? What did you do? What kind of qualification you got in able to be not just yourself being recovered but help tons of other people?
For sure. Yeah, so I took a year off, one full year off from work, and I focused for my entire year on recovery and just getting to know me and healing. And after that, right, after that you get that 1 year, people think like, now what? And I had that, now what? Now what do I do? I keep doing the same thing I was doing to recover, but now like, what does my future look like? And in working and being in some of the support groups for that year and some of the powerful healers that I worked with, outside support groups, I decided to go back to school. So I went back to school to get become a certified addiction counselor, and after that, I felt that I wanted to continue my education. So I went and got my master's in health leadership, and I started working for Drug Court of Vancouver, right? Which was a program, a lot of people on the downtown east side, they're facing jail time and criminal charges, but it's really related around their drug use. Drugs make you do, crazy things to get what you need, right? So that program was, you can either go to jail, you can either do our 14-month program, and rehabilitate and get well, and we provide a lot of things for them. I started there, and what I found was like I couldn't watch addicts go into jail anymore. We had our own court system, so these clients had to show up every week at court for progress notes, and if they like jump, if they just like took off, there'd be a warrant for their arrest and they'd get arrested. And sometimes they got arrested in the court. And I just thought like, this isn't helping them. They're being punished and it didn't line up with my ethics. So I left and, I've worked for residential treatment centers and I've worked, for outpatient programs, and, so now I get to work with alcoholics and addicts, and I get to, a lot of them that come to see me or go into those treatment centers now, right? They're paying to be there. So they, most of the time they want to be there and they really want to get well, but I get to face them one-on-one. I get to tell them like, yes, like I have been there too. Yes, me too. And I think that's something really, really powerful in helping alcoholics and addicts because I'm not coming just from a place of book smart. And yes, like I do need those skills. There are certain skills to have as a counselor and helping someone. But that instant like, yes, I understand. I've been there too, right? It's almost like an instant rapport with someone because they don't think you're just like you don't know what you're talking about and you don't understand how I feel, right? You don't understand how it makes you feel, but I can say yes, I do, right? Yes, I do, right? So there's a trust there, right, for me to help them and work with them, and I just I meet them with where I meet them where they're at because most of the time as addicts and alcoholics, we haven't been heard, we haven't been seen, and there I look at them like, okay, you're wounded, like how can we change that, right? Because it's like you said, addiction is, it's a solution to other things, right? Okay, so like, what is taking you out, right? I mean, the thing about, alcoholics and addicts too, and most people in the world, we don't like to feel pain. We don't like pain, and society teaches us like, well, here's an easy fix, here's an elixir for you. Now marijuana is legal because what they say it's like a less harmful drug. That's not true.
That's not.
I have tons of young adults coming in for treatment over just marijuana, right? Because they can't stop. These solutions, right, aren't helping and they're not sustainable and they're ruining people's lives, right? So I come in, with them and I get to help them and help their families understand addiction. That's something else I do, right? I do families to help the families understand addiction. What is addiction, and because it is a family disease as well. So, so I get to work with all of that and, hopefully, right, plant a seed. Sometimes all I can do is plant a seed. It's not guaranteed to recover and get well, right?
True,
Because
true.
it's a tricky disease, right? And I really believe it's a disease. It's a disease of the brain.
Totally. I 100% agree with your view. One of the challenges, Nanette, as you know, is like people go to treatment for a month or two, and they think that's it, done. And then they come, and I'm one of those, as you know, I've been like to it's not a badge of honor, but it's like I've been to 17 treatment center, and I just thought, okay, this time is going to be different. So in other words, I believe my personal belief is there has to be some kind of resiliency in us. In other words, I believe, Nanette, that going to treatment, why, yeah, first month or two, yes, because the desperation, the pain, but that will phase away. That will phase away because we forget where we came from. And then I believe that we have to have something to look forward to. If I don't have, if I don't, and that's my experience myself and helping other people to show them they have to look forward to something, either being a better dad, being a better mom, being a better productive member of society, and setting goals. So it is crucial that having that aftercare, which this is part of your work, that's what something you do and more. And I'm really pleased that you're doing this kind of work, Nanette, and watching you. Watching you helping others, volunteer, not just for work-wise, but volunteer helping other people, because there's work and there is something that we do for our soul, and we volunteer, and that's makes a huge difference. I know that also Nanette is another great individual that is going to be in our upcoming book, Resiliency Talks in Recovery, and you can definitely read her whole story. That it's coming soon, and I can't wait for people to get to know you in a different level. I always like to because I know you in a different way in the rooms, but the audience. I believe there is mental health aspect when it comes to recovery. And there is so many people that I know part of your work is that, being, having been in a narcissistic relationship, being having a narcissistic family. And I know that you do some work around that area. If you could tell us a little bit, what is narcissist, and why it is important to get help?
Narcissist. It feels so loaded, I think from my personal experience, like narcissists drive you crazy, right? Or make you think you're crazy. But I think, narcissists, there's different forms, there's different characteristics that everybody plays out. Not everybody plays out the same narcissistic characteristics, right? But for a narcissist, really, it's all about control. I think it's all about control, right? Trying to control and manipulate another human being, change the way they feel about themselves, the way they think about themselves, their change their decisions, right? Just change, try to It's all about, a narcissist has very low self-esteem, lack of security, although they'll portray that they don't, right? So it really putting that insecurity and that low self-esteem onto the other person, right? So they're nitpicking at that other person, right? Until their power, right? They're always drawing on that other person's power. And before you know it, the other person, they think they think that they're the one with the problem, right? They're the one with the problem. They're the one that's the crazy one. Or, they start to second guess themselves and doubt themselves, right? Like that's what a narcissist does. It breaks you down and it puts self-doubt in the other person, right? Self-doubt. The more you self-doubt and question yourself, the less power you have, right? So, because you're always giving your power over to a narcissist, right? And think crazy. And the sad thing is that, not many people even know what a narcissist is. Not many people have even heard the word, right? So they have no idea that they're dealing with a narcissist. Like when my therapist told me that I had a narcissistic father and I married a narcissistic person, right? I was like,
What does it mean?
But yeah, right. So, but when he told me what it meant, right? It was like my entire life rewound, right? And then sped forward, and everything, all the dots fell into place. Everything fell into place. Like it was this magical aha moment. Like, holy shit, now
Yes,
I'm
right.
I was like, wow, and that was like one of the most freeing moments I've ever felt because I knew I wasn't crazy that whole time, right? I knew I wasn't crazy. Like it all made like now I see, right? Now I see, which was incredible, right? And in that, right, then I could see, no wonder I have PTSD, which I didn't know about either. I had no idea what PTSD was. When my therapist told me, you're like walking around like you're a PTSD stick. And I'm like, what? Like what is that? He's describing it to me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, right? Yeah, for sure. My nervous system is always on alert, right? Like growing up in that kind of home, like I have a different nervous system, than others, right? Like it's based on growing up in that home, right? So, I got to work on that as well. So, yeah, narcissistic, became it's very important to me, right? And it's interesting because I could see my kids as they go out there dating, like one of them, like was dating a narcissist, and he's a young guy, and she was able to pick up on the behaviors and how he was trying to make her feel crazy, right? And question herself. But she's a smart kid, right? She's growing up with somebody that does the work. And it's neat to see how it's, planting seeds in my children to have healthier lives,
Village.
healthier relationships, right? Healthier way of thinking and doing and being, right?
Totally. No, that's again, I could not wait. It's just I am the same. I had no clue. You know a little bit of my story. Like when I came to recovery and I find out PTSD, and then when I look back, the things that I've been through. Oh my God, I didn't know what that means, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, or and then it's every aha moment while when you're not drinking or using drugs or medicate yourself, you're starting to realize some stuff. And even narcissistic, I've been doing a lot of research, and this is part of what something you're working on. I believe that you're working putting a program together that later on we can let people know about that program and when it's finalized. And so if people wanted to reach out and get help, we get your information. And definitely it is absolutely I believe this is what I learned through my recovery, Nanette, that oh my God, I thought I know everything. I had these perception that, oh, poor me, but every time, every day, I learn something, aha moment. Doesn't matter, as I'm in my 10 years of sobriety, and I started this 26 years ago, and a lot of suffering. So this podcast, as I shared at the beginning of the episode, that our aim is to impact and inform and motivate other peoples that they're going through. You, as someone who overcome addiction and some trauma and some other challenges that you've been through, what would be your advice to those moms? Like, what did you want your mom at 10 years old? I know it's our past culture, everything, but what did you want your mom, your parents at that age to tell you? How did you want them to treat you? So our audience, some of our audience are moms or, fathers, and they want to know, like, what can I do to help my kids not get into deeper trouble that they already are? So if you could please talk about a little bit about that would be great.
Listen and pay attention, give them the attention that they deserve, right? Validate them. Answer their questions. I find, we as parents and especially single parents, right? We are so busy doing, right? And going that we never stop to listen to our children, right? To pay attention to them, to give them a hug, right? To let them know that they are enough just the way they are, right? And that, yes, life's gonna be challenging and you're gonna have challenges, but you know what? We will get through them together, right? I will help you get through them together. And it's about stop punishing them for feelings, right? There's so many kids out there, like they're taught not to feel, suck it up, buttercup, or get back on the horse, or get back out there, even when they're hurting, right? Like they can't, right? They don't want to, and I think they're not acknowledged for those kinds of things. I think we put a lot of pressure on our kids, our own pressure and ideas of what we want them to turn out to be. And that's not fair. That's not fair, right? Our job is to love them, to listen to them, to validate them, to help them navigate through this world, so that they have a chance at success. It's not about molding them into who I want them to be. I always look at my children. I love my children, but my children are on loan. My higher power has given me my children to raise, to nourish, to love, and to grow. That's it. Because they're going to go on their own, right? They're going to enter the world on their own. How do I want them to go out there into the world? Do I want them to go into the world full of fear, not thinking that they're good enough, thinking that they have to be a perfectionist? No, right? I want them going out into the world being who they are, who they truly are authentically, right? So how do I nourish their authenticity without changing them and putting my ideas onto them who I think they should be, right? How do I embrace the gifts that they have, right? Instead of saying like, you're not going to make it with that, or you're not going to do well with that. No, nourish that gift that they have, right? It's there for a reason. So I think parents and we as parents, we put too much pressure on them to be something that we want them to be. And that's not why they're here. That's not why they're here. They're here to be their authentic self and bring their unique gifts to the world and, be a parent without trying to squash that, right? And it's hard. It's not easy. It's not easy, right? But, as a parent, we also have to show up as our authentic selves. We also have to be emotionally available. We also have to put time into them. And time into them is not racing them back and forth to activities. Time into them is not putting food on the table for them and saying, there's your dinner, like I've got to go. That's not time, Right? That's not time, right? Quality time is sitting with them, like really sitting with them. It's hard these days because technology, it's got everybody separated. You know, a family could be in the same house and all their heads are are down on the phone, computer, right? And I've seen it. Go out there and that's what you see. A family's like waiting, you know, for the plane on going on vacation and all their heads are down looking at the phone, right? They're not talking or communicating, right? You know, I schedule time, like, you know, to spend like really, really good quality time with my kids. No phone, no laptop, you know, even if it's like for a few hours a week, because now my teenagers and they're off and about, right? But it's important to stay connected and giving them a place and a space where they can talk to you about anything and not be scared. They should never be scared of you. Never be scared of you.
Thank you so. Wow, you know what, Nanette, this is gold. What you just described regarding, and that's why I ask question like this because I'm pretty sure many moms or dads or family parents they would benefit from what you just described, and that's why it really give me that satisfaction to do things like that and come up and being vulnerable. And I really want to appreciate you taking your time. But before we finish this episode, I want to finish this episode with something that is dear to my heart, and I'm pretty sure it's to you. And that's spiritual growth. Spiritual growth, I believe that the main things I realize, and Oprah talked about this well many years ago. I think it was a year or 2 years sober. It says, in this world, I'm not big enough. You're not big enough. We are not big enough to do it alone and to handle the situation, challenges that life will throw at us. And this is so few talk few that we can talk about spiritual growth. I'm pretty sure all day, me and you, because I know where you're at with that. But that's one of the things that I believe that there's a responsibility for people that been through the hell and back, and now we talk about the spiritual growth. What is the spiritual growth to you, and how can people start practicing that?
Yeah, it's loaded, you know. Spiritual growth. You know, spiritual growth, like when I started to tap in, I think it was just for me, it became a willingness to try something different. Try something different. Like I didn't know if it was going to work or not. You know, I didn't know if, you know, incorporating some spiritual practices into my life was going to make a difference. But I tried it anyway. Like I sort of did it like an experiment. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll do this for, you know, X amount of time and see what comes out, you know, after that. And, you know, so I started with small things like you know, a small meditation, because I couldn't meditate like well at the time, you know, and a small prayer and, you know, maybe a little journaling, right? Or I sometimes started off with like a, you know, a positive reading, something positive, something inspirational to start my day with, right? Started to change the way I think when I read those things, right? In the morning, setting an intention, right? So, you know, even from a reading, I could say, you know, take an intention from that reading for my day and see how that works. And what I noticed in incorporating some of these small practices, because they are very small, something started to change in me, right? The way I felt about myself, the way I felt about others, the way I felt about the world, it started to change. You know, my thinking started to change too, because now I was putting in, you know, positive things, you know, reading something positive. I was fine. Like part of spirituality is just like, you know, being careful about what you put into your brain, being careful about what you're watching, what you're reading, you know. You know, how much of all that worldly stuff are you taking in? You know, are you sitting with self, right? Tapping into heart and self, because we're always up here. always up here, right? It's like spirituality brings you down here, right? So how can I get to that place? And sometimes it's just mindfulness, taking a few deep breaths anytime during the day. That just brings me back into my heart, right? Even touching my heart for me is a spiritual practice, right? These little tiny things, just as because this lets me know I'm okay and I'm safe, right? I feel it. I tap in. But the power, these faith building experiences, as things started to get better and I started to feel better and think better and have better days, just motivated me to do more and continue seeking. So, I'm constantly seeking new ways to enhance my spiritual growth, to connect more to my higher power, to let my higher power work through me. I've gotten to that point where, I line up my will with my higher power, and that's it. I let my higher power run the show. Like, I remember one day I was so tired, I was so done, and life was really, really lifey. And I was like, I don't know what to do anymore. And I was like, God, I give you my kids, my higher power. I give you my work. I give you my partner. I give you everything of me right now. And I remember making that decision. And I mean, and whoa, what a roller coaster ride. Everything started to change because I meant it, and synchronicity started to happen and doors started to open. All my work that I do after my schooling, I have never gone to go get a job. It has always come to me. All the work has always come to me, and that's just a powerful message for me that I'm on the right path, right? It's like if I have to do some of the work, for sure, there's a part I have to meet a higher power. I have to ask the universe, and I don't have a particular name, creator, universal mind, universe, I don't care, right? God, it makes no difference to me. It's a power, it's an energy, it's there, right? And if I the more I spiritually, like the more I look for spiritual growth, the more I tap in and work on my spiritual condition, the stronger that power gets in my life. The less work I feel like I have to do, right? Things aren't so difficult, and I'm not fighting life so much. I'm participating in life now, as opposed to fighting through it.
Wow, thank you so much. That's you know what? I'm enjoying this podcast so much, Nanette, that you have no idea. And I'm pretty sure we're gonna do more of this in different topic that because you give so much value to our audience. That I'm pretty sure I will be getting a lot of requests to do this again, and hopefully we can do this again. Any last word for our audience before we close this awesome and amazing episode?
I think I'd say, like, if something's not working in your life, or there's parts of your life that, you're not at peace with, then do something to change it. What does that look like, right? Change is possible, right? Change is possible. We have to do something different, right? In order to change, right? And trust that, right? Trust in that. Yeah, it's almost like if you're watching this, then perhaps something needs to change, right? What is that, right? And know that you're not alone in it. You never have to be alone in it, right? Because there's a world of help out there to do it.
That's a absolutely amazing finish. Thank you so much, Nanette, for taking your time and coming and sharing your experience, strength, and wisdom with us. And again, this episode will be a podcast on all platforms, YouTube, and all the platform in podcasting. And looking forward to serve you with more guests and more knowledge and inspiration in future. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Essie. I appreciate it. It's been great.
Thank you for joining us for another inspiring episode of Resiliency Talks. If you've been touched by today's episode and feel inspired to continue on your own journey of resilience, I encourage you to subscribe to our podcast for future episodes filled with wisdom, insight, and encouragement. Together, we can cultivate a community of support and empowerment. And remember, no matter what obstacles lie ahead, you are never alone. Visit our website at donotgiveupnow.com to access resources, connect with others on similar paths, and find the support you need to keep moving forward. Thank you for tuning in, and until next time, always remember, resilience is not just a trait, it's a testament to the strength of the human spirit. Keep believing, keep striving, and never give up.